paralyzing terror. And in this hair-raising orgy of sadness.
The mouth of the streets to tell their friends how wonderful it is to be scared to death.
Hello and welcome to episode 864. I'm your host, Desmond Reddick, back with you for another great episode. This episode's great, in fact, because we have our friend Terry Mitchell back with us to talk about a film he wanted to talk about, and it's a film that I've been wanting to rewatch for a while anyway, so a perfect pick. It's Brain Scan. So we're going to take a look at that 90s video game themed horror film featuring Eddie Furlong. And then yeah, it's a good long review. We talk about that. We talk about there's a little bit of interference on the track. We talk about that. Talk about all sorts of stuff. It's a great review. So listen to Terry and me talk about Brain Scan. And then I'm going to come back and talk at you for a little bit. There's some people that need some songs dedicated to them, so we'll get to that. First, we're going to play a song that's in the Brain Scan soundtrack, one of my favorite bands. I'm talking about the Butthole Surfers, and this is Leave Me Alone. It's been a little while, but I'm very happy to have back an old friend of ours, Terry Mitchell. Welcome back, Terry.
Hello. Hello. Hello, all.
Hello. So.
It's been since the epic Phantasm.
That's right. That's right. That's right. It's been a while. It's been a while. Yeah. But, you know, I said, hey, we should get you back to talk about more movies, and then... Okay. You were like, yeah, that sounds good. And then you recommended this movie. So introduce it and tell me why you wanted to talk about this one.
Well, Brain Scan's, I don't know, it's just one of those movies that seems like nobody knows about it, even though it's got Edward Furlong. It was the original screenplay was done by Andrew Kevin Walker. So You think people would kind of know that. It's just one of those, it's kind of an odd movie. It's a horror movie with not a lot of horror. It's got a slasher element to it with not a lot of slashing. It's like a teen movie. Not a lot of teens in it. There's one teen in the movie. Everybody else, like all the other teens, were in their 20s.
Yeah, so. Right. Yeah, yeah. When Eddie Furlong is the youngest person in your movie, he's 2 years older than the character he's playing, too.
No, he's the age his character is.
Is he 16 in the movie?
He's 15.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't have his driver's license.
Right.
He's riding his boat better.
Right.
But this may be weird because I've watched movies, you know, my whole life. This was my introduction to knowing who Frank Langella was.
Oh, interesting.
And I absolutely love Frank Langella's low-key performance in this movie. He has a moment where, later in the movie, where the cops give him the paperwork.
Right.
And he just has this, like, nod to him. And it's just like, that's acting.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It's almost like that character knew that it was that Eddie Furlong was the killer, like even before he did, before he even killed. Like there's like he's like super suspicious of him at that car crash that Furlong shows up to. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get into that.
Let's get into it. Let's talk about Brain Scan. Should I just synopsize it quickly?
I can do it.
Okay.
Basically, you got Michael, who is, you know, early years of Desmond, and he's hanging out with his friends at his horror club, non-podcast, and he's has a little trouble with the school, not being too happy with the material he's using. He's got a friend, Kyle, who we'll get into Kyle, but Michael also has the pots for the girl next door, the very lovely Kimberly. Gets a video game and some murders happen. Or do they?
Bum, bum, bum.
They don't.
Yep.
So Michael keeps running into a local detective and the trickster shows up, who is kind of like the branding and the thing everybody loves the most about the movie.
Mm, yeah.
Played by T. Ryder Smith.
Yeah.
Also, recently we would know him as Baron Underbite.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Venture Brothers, yeah. So, after some things happen, Michael kind of ends up with the girl. I don't try to be vague because I want people to watch this. We're going to spoil a lot, anyways.
Right, but, right. Yeah. That's one way to get around to it. So I hadn't seen this movie in 30 years. I saw it when it first came out, and then not
on
since
VHS.
Yeah. So this was. I remembered bits and pieces about it. Of course, I remembered the trickster and Frank Langella and Michael, but everything else was pretty much new information. In fact, I'd sort of forgotten the format of the video game because going into it, I was like preparing myself for like cringy video game effects of the character being pulled into a video game. But actually, that is dealt with, you know, very well in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
We get like the character basically falling through what looks like veins, or I guess we could just call maybe wires, right?
Mm-hmm.
Internet wires or whatever. And then it's just real life. So, and yet with the first time Michael plays the game, it's funny to me that, like, I was trying to place the date, and I guess, like, stuff like Resident Evil was around, right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That moment where the killer is stalking in the house, you know, and the trickster is telling him where to go, that very much felt like a video game to me.
Yeah.
But, like, almost, like, ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what I love about the movie.
Yeah, because that's what video games would turn out to look like quite a lot, mm-hmm. you know, even before they did. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of prescient in that way. I really just love how, like, Brain Scan is the name of the game, and mm-hmm. it just, like, hypnotizes you.
Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah, I like it.
Well, Andrew Kevin Walker's original idea was a videotape. You know, he didn't know much about, you know, a lot of video game stuff, but that was, somebody else had the story of Brian Owens. But in the original, Trickster was just the voice. T. Rider Smith was hired as just to be the voice, and at some point during, after his audition, they were like, hey, we need you to come out for makeup effects. He's like, okay.
Yeah.
That's
quite the difference, actually. You sign on to do a job where you think you're going to be sitting in your house coat, mm-hmm. Recording your voice, and then you're doing 4 hours of makeup a day. You know,
it's funny. Yeah.
I guess for him, there very much is no middle ground there, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to be the monster, or he's going to be the voice.
Yeah, but I guess just based on him talking about the different makeup tests they were doing and costumes, it sounds like they were trying to make him basically like a Hellraiser character.
Mm.
And then the director was like, no, more rock star, less leather.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know what this movie like ultimately reminds me of is Trick or Treat.
Yes.
Yeah. Like it's very much like a Trick or Treat of the 90s. And by Trick or Treat, mm-hmm. I mean the Sammy Kerr heavy metal guy coming back to life to what's his name from Golden Spoon. Is that what it's called? Golden Spoon.
No, that was,
Jesus.
Oh, it was, Alex's friend from, Family Ties.
Right. Skippy. Right. Family. Skippy. Right. Yeah. From Family Ties. That's what it was.
You're thinking of,
Petey or something.
No, are you thinking about Walter Koenig's son that did that the Joker for that Batman short?
No, I'm not okay. I'm not thinking about Boner.
Okay. Boners to Bone.
That's from Boners to Bone, that's right.
Yeah.
The late great Andrew J. Koenig. I met him a couple times. What a great person. Sad that we lost him.
Yeah, it was a good performance in that video.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he did a great Joker. He would have been a great trickster as well. You know, sort of a similar vibe. Sort of like an over-the-top cartoon character in the real world is sort of how the trickster operates, right?
Yeah.
Like, it goes it goes from pretty innocuous to, you know, pretty brutal. You know, like at first, like, Michael comes home and the trickster is just like eating all the food and is currently eating like a raw roasting chicken. Right.
Yeah. I love that so much. Mm-hmm.
It is very cartoonish.
Yeah. I like that because, it's a nice offset to like the drama that's going on with Michael.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So he, this movie suffers from, like, being low budget.
Ah.
Just certain ways. Like, John Flynn's done, like, you know, studio films, TV films, and stuff. I worked with big actors, you know, small actors, all that stuff. There's certain things in this. Like, this was, like, kind of out of his wheelhouse. This really wasn't his thing, but I think he did, you know, pretty good with it. Because he brought a different view of it. I think anybody else would have tried to make it more like Nightmare on Elm Street or Hellraiser or something like that.
Yeah, I mean he was more like a action slash crime mm-hmm. director, right? Like he did Rolling Thunder, and then he did Lock Up, right? Mm-hmm. He did Out for Justice.
Yes, I think that was his movie he did before this. He did before it.
Yeah, and then two TV movies and then Brain Scan.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, very, like, working director. But he definitely had, like, a focus, and that focus was crime slash action. Yeah, and this is definitely the one that really stands out on his filmography, for sure.
Apparently did not care for Edward Furlong.
Yeah, apparently he had to, like, shake him awake a couple times, and I don't know. I don't know if Eddie Furlong was someone that ever handled their stardom very well. I think he was kind of off the rails from the beginning.
Well, it's a weird thing that's on the DVD is, like, you know how they have the extras where somebody's talking about like the movie, and you don't have, like, anybody, like, you know, hey, this, they're just kind of talking. But at some point, like, even with Andrew Kevin Walker in the audio commentary with Flynn's son and T. Ryder Smith, it's like they wanted to get them to talk about what was going on with Edward Furlong at the time. And Andrew Kevin Walker didn't. He basically, it's like, I sold a script, and like, oh, cool, the movie's coming out. Awesome. Oh, there's a character, like, visual of Trickster? Okay, cool. But he had a lot of, like drama in his life at the time. Like, he had, like, family fight for custody of him and stuff.
Right, yeah. So, like, his aunt and stepbrother or something were trying to get custody from, like, away from his mother.
Really weird.
Yes. I mean, yeah, this was a kid that, you know, Hollywood did not treat well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, this is one of those things where it seems more like the family was the problem than Hollywood. It was just
right.
More Hollywood was just like, just come to work.
Right.
Thing.
Well, the family was trying to use him for a meal ticket.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, he is, to me, the weakest part of the movie.
Yeah, I don't think he's a good actor in any way.
No.
Like, the same goes for Terminator 2, right?
Yeah, he just squealed and screeched a lot, but he was good for that movie.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk about Kyle real quick.
Okay.
Ever since Fast Times at Ridgemont High, people have been trying to do this character. You need a good actor to do this character. Now, yeah. I've seen him in a couple things, just like some bit parts here and there. But
been in, because I don't remember recognizing him. But okay, sorry, go on.
Yeah, He's just been in a couple of TV shows and stuff like that.
Right, nothing, okay, yeah.
Nothing of super note. It's like, you know, you've got Spicoli and Floyd. You know?
Yeah.
You have to have a good actor to pull this off, because they need to know to not be, like, obnoxious
with
the character.
Yeah.
Even though the Spicoli character is obnoxious, like, the acting and all that isn't obnoxious.
No, for sure.
You know, so that's kind of a weak point. But
yeah, Kyle comes across as obnoxious.
Yeah.
That's what.
So when Kyle, spoiler alert, dies, I'm like, cool. Like,
yeah.
That's an interesting twist in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's funny. Like, it didn't even need to be a video game. You know, it could have been a book. You know, or it could have just been an imaginary friend, you know, like, when Michael first sits down to play the game, he kills somebody and he doesn't know he kills somebody until he's, you know, come out of the game. And then basically he is sort of blackmailed into playing the game again. Right.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, the first murder leaves him open to being caught. So now he has to do whatever the trickster says, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is kind of a cool premise, but it is very, like, simple. Like, like I said, it didn't need to be a video game.
Well, it was an adventure videotape originally.
Right.
But I think like when you get a decent like plot device to move things along, that you don't have to over explain, you know, like mm-hmm. a book or something like that. Then it gives you a lot of breathing room.
Yeah.
Like if this movie was made now, they would go into the development of it, they'd do this, they'd do that. It's like you don't need all that story to tell your story.
Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of, I think they could remake this now. You mm-hmm. know, a lot of VR and stuff.
Definitely.
It'd be a little easier than, you know, I think the video game concept of it was kind of the thing that people didn't get.
Right. That was it's sort of the goofy aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But really, like, again, I went into it expecting it to be goofier, and it really wasn't. Like, the video game aspect is barely there. It's barely there.
Watch the teaser trailer for it is cool.
Oh, yeah.
But the actual trailer for it, it does not match the movie.
Okay.
It has this kind of like, you know, like, Michael's a teenager, blah, 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 blah. It's just like, this is not like the movie.
Yeah. Huh.
I think that kind of done it. But I think the video game stuff, because it's not technically a video game, it's Hypnosis.
Yeah, right.
So, and I think kind of like with the, with the trickster talking, is the Hypnosis like suggesting things as you go?
Right.
Spoiler. So when Michael comes out of this and then he's talking to Kyle, he's like, hey, it's a good thing you didn't get that game. Somebody had like an aneurysm or something. which I love that. So
yeah.
My favorite line in this movie is when, after he did the third round, he just kept saying, this is crime. This is so much crime. This is a lot of crime.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, that should have been the tagline for the movie.
Yeah, totally. This is a lot of crime. Yeah, murder is a crime. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's some funny shit. Like, the whole... excuse me.
That's
I mean, part about the video gaminess of this movie is like the whole third act is like him trying to get through. I don't know why, but I guess he needed to go out and sneak around and see what was going on when people were looking for him. Basically, there was this big like manhunt in the neighborhood, in this sort of upper middle class neighborhood. And then like, but one of the things that bothered me about it really is Frank Langella's detective, you know, walks in on Michael, looking like he's about to murder somebody. And he found out because he was just walking down the street looking at houses. And he just happened to look at the house that Michael was in.
Yeah.
But when you consider that was the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
It really was really very much was like that game Manhunt, you know, he has to hide. He can't be seen. You know, it's pretty wild. It's pretty wild.
It literally has a lot of things that would come into games later on.
Yeah. Like even just like Splinter Cell, you know, like walking around trying to be quiet and, you know, it's mm-hmm. wild, just wild how much, you know, games would take from this movie, probably unintentionally. I can't really imagine.
I think kind of at the time, the only game that really was doing that was a couple years removed from this, was the original Metal Gear games.
Right, yes, right.
You had to duck around corners, could be seen. So, it's a really good story. I like the story. It's just some of the, some parts of it, because of the budget, just didn't translate as well.
Yeah. Well, okay, so this was still part of the era where the main character's bedroom was kind of awesome to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for this one, we have to point out that actually in both his bedroom and oh shit, what's her name? Kimberly's bedroom. They both have Aerosmith Get a Grip posters, right?
Yeah.
And well, yeah, because Furlong was in Living on the Edge, the video that came out on that record. So
yeah,
it's kind of a thing there. And there's a Predator poster with Arnold Schwarzenegger on it, you know, 2 years or well, actually at filming of the movie, you know, 1 year earlier, he'd been in Terminator 2. So that was kind of fun. For me, the laugh came when he drank the big glass of milk. I was like, like Stacy was sort of paying attention to this movie on the couch. And I'm like, look, Stacy, look. She's like, what? I'm like, like, this is back when people still drank milk in movies. When's the last time you've seen someone drink a glass of milk?
I don't know. I've never
It's been a long time. But there used to be so many scenes of people just gulping down a big glass of milk. Not unlike the one in this one where he spills it all down his chin. Disgusting.
I got one. It's a few years ago. It's like maybe 10 years ago. No Country for Old Men.
Okay.
There's a milk scene.
Right. It's a rarity these days. It's a rarity.
Yeah. it is.
Crazy ass soundtrack, by the way.
Oh, the soundtrack is what really pulled me into this.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, because at the time I was listening to KMFDM a lot and White Zombie a lot, and then I see the soundtrack and it's got Thunderkiss 65 remixed by KMFDM. I'm like, this is amazing. Yeah. I didn't know that there was an EP of remixes for Thunderkiss 65 that KMFDM did.
Right. Yeah. He's been doing that shit since the beginning.
But back to the room. The
right,
room.
Sorry, yeah.
His room was way more believable than her room. Her room just had that, this is what a teenage girl would do.
Yeah. And when I say rooms, I sort of mean like boys' rooms. Because teenage girls' rooms in movies almost always look exactly like Kimberly's room.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
But his place looked like that. Like, he spends time in his room.
Yes.
His family has money. His dad has money, and that, so he can just kind of have all of this stuff in that one room.
Yeah, up in his like loft attic bedroom. Yeah, pretty cool.
The thing I thought was funny was when they show Kyle's room. Kyle's got the small room,
right?
And a drum set in it.
Yeah.
Michael has the big room and like no instruments.
Yeah.
You would think because, you know, he has that reaction with his dad, when his dad leaves the message on the phone, that he would have like things.
He's got his own like upright fridge and freezer. Yeah.
Yeah. I think there might be a full kitchen there.
There's like a kitchenette and then there must be a bathroom. Like that's kid has his own fucking apartment.
Yeah. That one of the big influences on this was Rear Window, too.
Suburbia?
No.
Or Disturbia. I mean, not Suburbia.
Fright Night. Fright Night was.
Oh, right. Yeah. Similar vibe to that, too.
I just got the steel book for that. So.
Oh, right on.
This was kind of a double feature for me. So.
Cool. Yeah, good double feature with Fright Night, for sure.
Yeah. So, Frank Langella's character is... He's the calmest police detective I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, Edward Furlong comes up, and he's like, what are you doing here, kid? You live around the area? From these people, you know. Then when he sees him again, he goes, are you following me?
Yeah. And then the third time he says, we've met a few times.
Yeah. When he comes to the house. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the scene, actually, that you brought that part up, is when Langella and his partner are leaving. And the partner's like, he's like, well, what are you doing on that side? And he's like, give me the keys. I'm tired of you driving 20 miles an hour around this town.
Right.
It's just like such a small, like insignificant part. But yeah. It's just like,
yeah. It almost felt improv'd.
Yeah.
Right. Like it almost felt like, shit, you're on the wrong side of the car. What do we do now? mm-hmm. kind of thing. And you can actually, you can see the camera crew in the window reflection on the car in that shot too, which is pretty funny.
I didn't notice that. I usually catch windows.
Yeah. Same here. Yeah.
When somebody's like, oh, there's a boom mic here and there's somebody standing back, I completely miss it. Usually right. windows I notice.
Yeah. It's rare I catch the boom mic, but yeah, I'm always looking in reflections.
This is an odd thing to, you know, kind of chat about, but the costuming in the movie was believable.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, this is that time in the 90s where, you know, they were like trying to really push, you know, well, this is what a teenager obviously dresses like.
Right.
You know, but this one, it's like, yeah, this is what all my friends and I dress like.
Yeah, there's like a lot of plaid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of baggy clothing and a lot of plaid. And like the soundtrack matches for a lot of that, right? Like, it's got some weird shit. I played already. I'm speaking in the future, but I'm going to play that Butthole Surfers song, leading into this one, Leave Me Alone. And then, I don't know, maybe we'll kick out with the Primus song, but it's got Primus. It's got Tad. It's got Mudhoney. It's like a perfect era specific soundtrack.
Yeah, like most of these bands.
Pitch Shifter. I forgot about them. Yeah.
Aside from Dandelion and Old, I have owned albums from everybody on here.
Yeah, same.
Stuttering John. I love that song. I love that song. The Primus. I was getting more into Primus at the time.
Yeah. That song, Welcome to This World, is from Pork Soda, which is mm-hmm. an undeniable banger. Like, totally great album. Now, you can say whatever. Albums. Yeah, exactly. The peak of their powers, for sure. Mm-hmm.
This was my introduction to Tad.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And what a song to be introduced to.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a killer soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. I think the Old song is the only one I would randomly skip.
Mm, yeah.
Not that it's like it's a bad song. It's just like, for me, it doesn't flow with the rest of it.
Yeah, that's true.
There's
always a couple, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like even the Crow has, you know, It Can't Rain All the Time or whatever.
Well, that's at the end, so you can go, yeah. All right. What song am I? Crow. I don't think I skip over anything. Usually when I start going, I go. I think, oddly enough, as much as I love them, I think Pantera is the only one that doesn't flow for me.
Yeah, that's funny. You're the second person I've heard talk about not liking that song on the soundtrack.
Oh, no, I like the song. Like the past month. I think it just kind of interrupts the flow of the soundtrack.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Poison Idea cover.
Yeah. I actually...
Did I? Oh, I said that I right. Yeah, sorry.
I had a CD single for 5 Minutes Alone, and that was on it, too.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, it was recorded around the same time.
the CD single. Love it.
Yeah. The CD single, which is the same size as a CD. It has 2 songs on it.
Yeah, yeah. why am I spending $9 on this?
Yeah. Oh, I had so many. It was entertaining to see CDs in this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know why it was like.
It was sort of being touted as the new thing, right? Like mm-hmm. in this case, like video games that came on CD. It's like, whoa, they don't even have cassettes anymore, right? Yeah. It's on a disc, right? It's sort of like the new kind of thing. And even I like the setup of the game system that he's got. You know, it's like
this TV and all that.
Yeah, it's like the thing that you feed into the. The disc drive is actually in like a CD case.
Yeah,
are you hearing that interference? You got interference coming over your line.
Do I?
Yeah. It's all right. I can probably edit most of it out.
I'm working on a new little setup to be able to record through my computer.
No worries. Yeah, it's just it sounds like it's almost like a electric razor keeps coming on near the microphone or something.
Oh, yeah, this goes through my phone, so.
Oh, okay.
It might be something like that.
Anyway. But yeah, like you put the disc in like the plastic case, and then you slip it into the game system, and then of course, like we talked about Michael's room, but we didn't talk about Michael's, you know, genius 1995 computer setup, because he had like voice command way back when he created. Yeah. Created an artificial intelligence of his own.
Yeah. Voiced by T. Ryder Smith.
Voiced by T. Ryder Smith as Igor. Amazing. Amazing.
One of my favorite moments in it is, and it's kind of a weird thing, is because, you know, Igor's obviously pre-programmed to say different things, but when Michael is going into like the last disc and Igor tells him goodbye.
Right.
I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
and it also kind of indicates that maybe there's something else kind of going on.
Right. Right.
So there is a deleted scene that I watched, and I am thrilled. It's not actually a deleted scene. It's a deleted part of a scene.
Oh, so like an extended scene.
Yeah. I'm absolutely thrilled it is not in the movie because it is horrible.
Oh, so let me know. Tell me.
So, when Michael and Trickster merge together and he drops down to the floor.
Yeah.
So in the movie, Michael, you know, puts his hand on there and he pulls himself up and, you know, you see him. Originally, there was like a Cronenberg-esque body horror thing of the two of them merged together and she's like kicking them and kicks him off of the bed and then he comes up. Looking like, and it's like, it's a seamless edit from how the original was. I mean, of course it's edits together, but,
right.
Yeah, she does the screaming. It's almost repetitive, you know?
Right. Right.
So, I'm like happy they got rid of that. Cause I'll be honest with you, even though what they showed was from like a videotape somewhere, it didn't fit everything else.
Okay. So come with me for a sec. Did she could see the Trickster, right?
Yeah, in that part, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But that was also still the game.
Yeah.
So that sort of makes more sense.
Yeah.
Huh, yeah, okay. Another thing that Eddie Furlong is not great at acting, it's the limp.
I hate that. Like...
you hate that he has a limp period?
I think that like when he wakes up earlier, and the worst makeup effect in this entire movie for me is the scar on his leg.
Right.
And even like the first time I saw this, I was like, oh, that looks bad. Like, not like, oh, his leg looks bad. It just looks like, well, we'll just get some stuff here, some stuff there. Like, I think if they just had like any, like a just smaller scar, not so wide on it, I think it would look better, but it also bothered me that, like, you know, they had to prove that the kid that was crawling on the ground in his dream was him.
Right.
And he looked at the scar on his leg. Like, it made no sense at all. And
yeah,
it still
it's so
makes
stupid.
No sense. In a movie about a magic band that comes from a video game, the knee thing makes no sense to me. Also, how does he pay for the game? That's the one thing that I'm just like, what? They just send it to him. Like, oh yeah, here's the game.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I guess they want to infect you, right? Yeah, it's from like an ad in Fangoria magazine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And he calls the number and it just like, you know, this is what we decided for you. And then the game will be in the way. And then he's like, what? And then he gets the game. He's like, huh? So, yeah. It's like they're just giving away like
I didn't even give them my address.
Yeah, all he had was a phone number, which the area code for the phone number is not right for the area the movie's supposed to take place in.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the area code is in Pennsylvania, but the movie's supposed to take place in
Jersey, right?
New Jersey, New Jersey, yeah,
yeah, because there is an address on the envelope that he gets. I saw the Jersey. Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what your area codes are. I can barely keep mine straight.
Oh, there's a bunch of, it's just like everywhere. And with the invention of cell phones, it made area codes even worse.
Yeah, yeah.
In my area, 100%. There's like four.
Well, we switched, I don't know, about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But anyway.
And now another episode of Area Code Talk. Military.
But it was filmed in Montreal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting thing I learned from the audio commentary was John Flynn's son, who lives in Paris, was basically his assistant on the movie. This was his first, paid Hollywood thing where he, because he spoke fluent French, it helped him. It was dad with things on the set.
Right, right.
So, because they had to have a certain amount of crew and all that.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, because it's really weird. Canada cares about the people that have jobs. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wish my industry was as protected by the government as our film industry, but
yeah, I wish that for Downey too. It's a nightmare. It's been a nightmare for like 7-8 years.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's getting worse. A friend of mine's a math teacher, and he's in a school where it's kind of rough, and he's been attacked by his students a couple times, and he's hasn't had the job that long.
Right.
He's like, basically it's his first, teaching job.
But yeah. Not fun. Yeah. Not fun.
So, speaking of schools, it's very 90s that they would have the horror club.
Right.
And they could watch whatever they want.
Right. Right. until their principal walks in on them.
Yeah, but yeah. Still, there were some things when I was in school, because this is around when I graduated, like when this was kind of going on, so it was right. Still kind of, which, side note, seeing all the things for the downward spiral being 30 years old, I just,
I know.
Yeah, I've been out of high school for 30 years.
That hurts. That hurts, that one.
Yeah. I remember it. I was like, a cutting edge album.
But no, I was a teenager when that came out. It can't be that old.
But the principal was being treated like a villain in the movie.
Right.
And it's like, voiced by the actor that voices Magneto, by the way.
Right, right.
But he's being treated as this villain, and all it's like, he has a responsibility for all the kids,
Yeah.
So,
I do love that moment where, what does he say? He said, what is the name of this movie? And he's like, death, death, death. And then he's like, oh my God. And then under his breath, you hear Eddie Furlong go, part two.
And he's like, oh,
yeah. That was good.
He is a little like by this time, horror movies have been demonized, for like 30 years at the time.
For sure. Yeah.
And it's like, it's the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah.
But do you think that I thought it was pretty sadistic of Michael at the end where he gives him the game to play, knowing what's going to happen to him.
Right.
Like it's you think I'm a horrible person now. Oh, wait, you get a load of this one. I've been thinking about this since the last time I watched it, and they could definitely do a remake or a sequel or whatever to it. Even Andrew Kevin Walker's like, yeah, they could remake this movie.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that the trickster is based on like his appearance and all that is more for Michael. So like if the principal does it, it'd be a whole other experience for him.
Right. Right.
And to me, that makes it, like, it would be kind of a cool, like Tales from the Crypt kind of TV show.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, different people experiencing different things. I mean, you could do anything with it.
Yeah, that's true. It's like the game itself is not like just like you're a killer. It's mm-hmm. like an immersive horror game, right? So, yeah. And it's, yeah. and it seems like things are pretty specifically crafted to certain people. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, like that is a great premise for an anthology series on its own, right?
Yeah.
It's like the, I don't know if you ever read the comic book, The Silver Coin.
No.
No, it's just about this cursed coin that just like keeps popping up in people's lives. You know, people find them and then things go horribly wrong in very different ways.
So, how old is that?
Like last year, I think it ended. Like over the past 2 years, it's been a series.
Well, here's the thing that's crazy about that. So I'm going to say, probably actually not long after, what you know, when this movie was, a friend of mine, he worked at Sony Factory for a little while.
Oh, okay.
And he worked in a different area than I did. And there's this one dude that this dude was just like straight out in the metal, and yeah. he would be like, try these guys. That's how, like, you know, 90% of the metal bands I ended up getting into that were from overseas. So I'm like, oh, I haven't heard of these because, you know, internet wasn't as wild as it is now. But the two of them would just talk about cool ideas for things. And they literally had the idea for a TV show or a movie based around people finding a coin.
Ah.
And that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like they literally, I think they called it the God coin or something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's basically the same premise. It's wild how the world works.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. It's like a jam comic in a way between like, James Tynion, Rom V, and a couple other authors and a couple other artists as well. So it's, yeah, so they sort of like jump back and forth between, you know, writing little anthology stories set within this world of this cursed coin.
What was it called again?
The Silver Coin? The Silver Coin, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a great comic book. Absolutely grotesque at times, so good stuff. That comes recommended not just to Terry, but to everybody else as well.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else to say about Brain Scan?
This is the first time, because I watched it yesterday. Kyle's room, there's a lot of blood in there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that was personal. Like the other guy was just like sloppy, but it's right. like the Kyle one was personal.
Yeah.
So that it's like, you know, like the more I think about it, like Michael's a horrible person.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
It's not Edward Furlong. It's Michael. Michael's a horrible person.
Yeah. Yeah. The first person he kills is a stranger, but everyone else after yeah. that is, you know, somebody he knows. Right.
Yeah. I do recommend this movie. I recommend the soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's definitely something that you could pair up with, you know, The Matrix or, what was the Cronenberg one?
Existenz.
It did work pretty well with Fright Night.
Yeah. Or Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat, which is a movie I literally haven't seen since it was first on HBO.
I mean, shit, maybe we should talk about that next time.
Oh, I'll look into getting it. Yeah.
All right. Well, what do you give it out of 5?
I'm going to give it a 4.
Yeah. I think I was sort of like 3.5 going in, but you talked me up to a 4 as well. I did enjoy watching this. And Terry, let's get you back on the show sooner than later.
Yeah. One more thing. The Theme by George S. Clinton.
Yes.
Not George Clinton.
George, not George Clinton. Clinton. Yeah, very different
which
Clinton.
For the longest time, I never paid attention to the S, and I kept thinking it was George Clinton.
Yeah, I'm like, man, this guy's very versatile.
It's insanely reminiscent of, like, Twin Peaks.
Oh, you know what? It's funny you say that, because I wasn't placing it, but I was like, yeah, I've heard this before.
Yeah, it's very reminiscent of that.
That makes sense.
Like, it has that dreamlike, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, it's the first time that, like, it kind of clicked for me. So, but yeah, I'm always available.
Right on. Well, let's do that soon. Let's get out of here with Primus and Welcome to This World. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
I'm going to try and make this quick, and I'm going to go just off the top of my head, but I had some horrible news, shocking news, in fact, given to me a couple weeks ago about my cousin Stephen. And that news was that he had died. So I also did not know that he was sick. And that's not like part of the whole thing. It's just my parents are not good at telling me things. So, yeah. So anyway, a couple of weeks ago, we lost my cousin, Steven Reddick. And, you know, I didn't see a lot of Steven growing up, but I saw him at the sort of like integral points, like, for example, like my first ever mountain bike was a hand-me-down from him. I remember watching two James Bond films with him. One was on TV, one was on VHS. But it was the Roger Moore one where he's skiing. I don't know. I don't care the title. That's that one. Can't remember. And then The Living Daylights. And I remember telling Steve, I remember telling him that Timothy Dalton's my favorite James Bond. And he told me to shut up. And I remember going to see, shit. What's the second one? Not Goldmember. That's the third one, right? The one with Fat Bastard. The first one. The first one with Fat Bastard. That's the second one, or whatever that is. That came out in 99? I'm trying to remember why we were hanging out at that time. I think our dads were together doing something. But anyway, we fucking died laughing in the theater watching that movie. I remember that. I also remember like being, so we, there was this family, you know, reunion, not a family reunion officially, but like, yeah, the whole family sort of got together at this point. And you know, his family never really stuck around very long. Also, another reason that we never saw them a lot. And also, for a lot of the time, Steven lived with his mom. So, there was that as well. So, even when we saw his dad, we didn't see him. But yeah, so, I think it was in Kamloops, we had this family get-together. I remember playing pool and sucking. With Steven and our other cousin Jody. And Chrissy was there. Hi, Chrissy. We just sucked. We just sucked. And we didn't know that we were playing with a trick ball for way too long. For way too long. Jesus Christ. But, quickly before they left, Steven pulled me aside. And, cause he wanted to play me something and he knew that I liked heavy music, but so like something that I would consider heavy music that I liked was, you know, from the jump, Guns N' Roses. And then from there, like Metallica, Black Sabbath, Anthrax, Slayer. Then a little later, Cannibal Corpse. And yeah, a shitload of new metal. All that too. Pantera, you know. Motorhead. You know, pretty basic. You know, like pretty generic metal. And then he pulled me aside and it really sort of like open my mind to like other subgenres of metal and stuff. And, you know, I think maybe like the most subgenre-y I got was Napalm Death. I listened to them before, but then like I also branched out and discovered like Carcass, you know, and, you know, later on down the line, Pig Destroyer, who we'll talk about a little bit later. But I remember him being very proud to open this, and I remember this awesome box set version. Is it the Legacy Edition? That's sort of what I saw when I Googled, but I didn't get any good images. It was maybe like a long box style kind of box set thing. It was like the deluxe version of the album, and I'm talking about the album Draconian Times by Paradise Lost. It's like a gothic metal band, who I have since become a fan of. And, you know, I have my cousin Steven to, thank him for. So rest in power, cousin. Here's Hallowed Land by Paradise Lost.
You love to be so free.
That album fucking rules, by the way. Draconian Times, again. Draconian Times by Paradise Lost. They're still going. Still, more bad news this week. Devastating loss to the heavy metal community. Pig Destroyer, one of my favorite bands. You know, I mean, like, other than Napalm Death, like, my only... No, that's not true. I like Wormrot, too. I like three bands that are grindcore. Those are them. One of them is Pig Destroyer. And this week, Blake Harrison from Pig Destroyer. He's the like the sound design guy, the sound effects guy, background singer. You know, he's got like a sample pad and stuff like that. He's doing crazy shit. And, you know, there's like audio samples and stuff in some of the Pig Destroyer songs as well. So, you know, more than just like sound pads or whatever. But, yeah, so, huge blow. That sucks. One of my favorite bands. So, rest in power, Blake Harrison. So I'll say, hey, if you appreciate the podcast and you want to help out a little bit, you can go to patreon.com/dreadmedia. Support the show the best way I know how. And we'll get out of here with some grindcore. So you've been warned. It's this song, and then the podcast is over. So, you guys take care of yourselves. Take care of others. Rest in power, Steve. Rest in power, Blake. Here's a song I thought appropriate for Brain Scan. Anyway, it's a Pig Destroyer song, and it's Thought Crime Spree by Pig Destroyer.